Doug Burgum faces the heat in D.C. and says he'll play by the rules as Interior Secretary. The return of blue laws will not be happening anytime soon, as the North Dakota legislature says, no way. And Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says, it's time to lower taxes in Minnesota. I kid you not. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Hallstrom here with you for the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is my daily attempt to fill you in on what has been happening today, because if your day has been anything like mine, if you have your head down in reports and doing financial reconciliation or whatever your A job is, I've been doing mine too. But over the last hour or so, been able to catch up on a lot of things, very interesting things as always, and I'm pleased to bring them all to you today. I have to admit to you, I didn't get a chance to hear much of Doug Burgum's testimony today. I had a couple meetings and things going early on when that was happening. I did listen to a little bit of a recap on it. Sounded like it was pretty clear cut. There was some people who had to make their points, of course, about energy, and climate change came up quite a bit today. Not just with Doug Burgum, but Scott Bessent, who would be the Treasury Secretary. Yes, the people that are behind climate change, they stand to lose a lot of money here if we don't continue to fund all these crazy projects. So they want to definitely keep this train running down the tracks. But nobody on Capitol Hill today sounded like they really cared a whole lot about keeping the climate change discussion going. So we'll tell you about all of that here today on the program. We've got a couple of guests for you today. You probably remember Matt Lyseth. He was the president of Hornbacher's. One of the great business stories in our community. Grew up in Moorhead and bagged groceries at Hornbacher's growing up as a teenager. In later years, got a job, eventually became the president of the company before the company was sold to Coburn's out of St. Cloud. He has since moved on to other things. He is now a consultant for businesses about efficiency and process, things like that. Not just grocery stores, but one of his clients is a grocery store, so he's still tied into the business. And I'm interested in talking with him a little bit today about what the future is of getting our food. And will there someday be a different way that we get food instead of going to the grocery store? So we'll talk about that today and some trends in that business as well. At 5:35 today, Dr. Thomas Ambrosio will be with us. He's a political science professor at North Dakota State University. He's my go-to when we start hearing big things overseas as far as international politics and international issues. And when I heard about this ceasefire and prisoner swap, hostage swap, I guess you could say, between Israel and Hamas, I wanted somebody who could break this down and help understand why 33 people are going one way and like 1,000 are going the other direction, and why that is a fair trade. So we'll talk to Dr. Ambrosio about that here today as well. And a whole bunch of other very interesting things today that I want to play for you and talk to you about here on the show. So we got a lot to do. And like the old movie, we had a long way to go and a short time to get there. So let's rock and roll here with the 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines as we go rapid fire, catching you up on a busy day. I'm coming to you live from the Steve Hallstrom studio, and it is brought to you by the good folks that sponsor our studio each day, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to PCCND.com to learn more. Our phone line is sponsored by Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment and get in this week at valleychristian.co. We start the 4 o'clock wrap every day with the almanac, weather information to let you know what some historical data points look like for this day, January 16th. Our average high today is 18, and our average low is 0. We will not drop down any further than 18. 18 is the bottom, and we'll start moving our way up here in a few days. Average low is 0. Record high, 47 back in 1942. Record low, minus 35 in 1977. Sunrise this morning was at 8:07, and sunset will be at 5:07. We will gain 2 minutes and 1 second of daylight today. Up until now, it's been a minute and change. Well, now we are over 2 minutes. In the markets today, the stock market was pretty much a down affair across the board. Not much in the way of losses, but losses nonetheless. The Dow was down 68 points, the S&P 500 was down 12, and the NASDAQ was down 172. WTI crude oil today was down $1.25 at $78.77. Gold today up $29 an ounce at $2,746. Silver up 8 cents at $31.81. And Bitcoin today about where it was yesterday, $99,800 a coin. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $3.10 today, up 2 cents from yesterday. Average price in North Dakota is $2.87, Minnesota $2.97, South Dakota $2.86, and diesel today $3.60 a gallon. In the news today, former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum was on Capitol Hill today taking part in his confirmation hearing for Interior Secretary, took questions from senators on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Burgum talked about his accomplishments with North Dakota oil and gas production and the diversity of energy sources that we have been developing here in the state. Also talked about his relationships with tribal nations. One interesting exchange came today where Democrat Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii asked Doug Burgum, "Will you tell President Trump not to allow oil drilling in the Bear Ears National Monument in Utah?" And Doug Burgum said, "Well, I can tell you this. As part of my sworn duty, I'll follow the law and the Constitution. You can count on that. I've not heard anything about President Trump wanting to do anything other than advancing energy production for the benefit of the American people." Pretty well handled there today. Bismarck Tribune reports that in order for Doug Burgum to get in front of that group today, he had to come up with an ethics agreement with federal regulators. And so Burgum, which, as you know, owns a lot of stuff in North Dakota, he will continue to hold financial interests in farmland he rents out in North Dakota and Minnesota. He will divest his oil mineral interests in Williams and McKenzie counties. And he will also sell all of his shares of 19 different companies like Alphabet, Microsoft, Apple, Adobe, Netflix, Verizon, so on and so on and so on. He also will divest of his interest in many energy companies that you probably have heard of as well. He will not divest his financial interest from his family's ag company, Arthur Companies. So I guess I hadn't thought of that. But in order to do that job, they say, okay, you're going to have to get rid of some stuff. And you know what? It makes sense. And I think that he should. If he is going to be someone who's in charge of energy policy, I think the same should apply to Nancy Pelosi as well for voting on the different things. But that's another story for another day. WDAY Radio reports the North Dakota House has voted down the blue law bill, and it never stood a chance. 89-4. The only four state representatives that voted in favor of it were the four that introduced the bill. So it got taken care of in a hurry today. We've been talking about that. So stores will stay open on Sunday mornings. The forum today has an interesting story that I wanted to pass along to you, and I'll try to summarize this one. It's a fairly complicated story, but I'll try to summarize it fairly quickly. They are introducing a bill that would require the state of North Dakota to maintain a website that would make it easy for you and me to see what the legacy fund is investing in. And the bill is in committee in the House right now, but they would have to list all of the companies, funds, derivatives, and so forth that the legacy fund is investing in. And it would require them as well to divest from any Chinese companies that they may have any holdings with at all. And I don't know how many Chinese companies there's legacy fund money in, but I am in favor of that. We can find other good investments other places. So I think that's an interesting thing, and I think that's a good idea. There should be a lot of transparency on legacy fund. It's getting so big that a lot of us are curious how it's going and what it's investing in. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says the Star Tribune is pitching his first budget in the Trump era as a counterweight to the incoming president's threats to impose tariffs, which he says will raise costs on everyday Minnesotans. So basically what's happening, he's saying, well, you know that Donald Trump is going to raise all of our taxes or raise inflation with all of these tariffs. So I'm going to lower Minnesota's sales tax rate for the first time in state history by 0.75%. So that's what he's trying to do there. He said a lot of other things there, but that was probably the most interesting one today. CNBC reports that sales of all-electric vehicles and hybrids reached 20% of new car and truck sales in the U.S. for the first time last year. This is a landmark for green vehicles, slower of a pace than many had previously anticipated. But I'm actually surprised by that. I kind of thought maybe the number would be a little under 10%. So one out of every five cars that was sold in 2024 was an electric or hybrid vehicle. 3.2 million of them altogether were sold. Also in the news today, American investment banks, according to CNBC, just disclosed a record-smashing quarter helped by surging trading activity around the U.S. election and a pickup in investment banking deal flow. Let me interpret this for you. Banks are thinking that things are going to be decent again with Donald Trump in the White House. So there's more deals going on, and investment banks that are part of making those happen are benefiting from that. Just another part of the story of Donald Trump being the next president of the United States. And finally, the Minnesota Twins are taking their games this summer into some different territory. The Twins are announcing a new standalone streaming option coming up later this month. They are expected to appear on cable and dish. However, there will be, for the first time, a new standalone streaming option. So if you want to see the Twins, you can pretty much see them wherever you go. Although there's probably ways to do that with your cable and dish package as well through your phone, but there you go on that. And that, friends, is a look at some of the stories that are making headlines here on this Thursday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. 4:18 on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we return, new testimony today in the trial of the Fargo Schools employee who's on trial for sexual impropriety with a student. Today, the student spoke. We'll tell you how that went coming up next. We are excited to be heading out to Washington, D.C. for the second inauguration of Donald J. Trump coming up on Monday. Live coverage from D.C. Monday and early Tuesday here on the flag. We want to say thank you to some folks who made this trip possible for us to be able to bring a slice of history home to you. ND Estate Services. Avoid probate, save taxes, protect your heirs with affordable expertise. Visit ndestateservices.com. Kramer for Senate, take the survey on your 2025 priorities. They want to know. For Senator Kevin Kramer and President Trump, go to kevinkramer.org and the North Dakota Republican Party. Also brought to you in part by NODAC agent Matt Moxness, High Point Networks, the Lakes Area Patriots, the Trump Store in Lake Park, Encore Family Consignments in Fertile, Minnesota, Dakota Tire Brakes and more, Moxie Job at the Lights, and AM 1100, The Flag. All right, new testimony today that, honestly, this story is a tough one when you're talking about a former student talking about sharing nude photos with a former school employee, Ashley Peterson, former Davies High behavioral staffer. That trial is underway. And in testimony that took place yesterday, the student had his opportunity to take the stand. The student not being identified because of the age of the interactions at the time, took the stand and gave his account of what happened there. And I'll summarize it for you the best I can here. The student is 18 years old now, but at the time of this interaction or these interactions was 17. The student graduated from Davies back last spring in 2024. He said that he didn't think the relationship that he had with Peterson was inappropriate, but he did say it was certainly sexual in nature. He said, quote, it was trustworthy, like a best friend at school, he said. And the forum has this write-up. I'm getting some of this from them. The student basically said that got to know Peterson as just your typical student-staff relationship there, but found her attractive and started telling her in person and via social media that he was attracted to her and wanted to sleep with her. And he testified that Peterson initially said she was shocked at what he said, but then she kind of warmed up to the whole thing, eventually telling him that she felt the same. But while he was a student, that certainly would be a no-go. And then the student went on to say that he asked Peterson to send her a nude photo, and she did. And then he sent her nude photos along the way as well. And then it got kind of progressed from there, that there was some comments made both ways that were inappropriate. And he said she told him that she wanted him to come over and have sex with her. And he said, I didn't do that at the time. And then the whole thing kind of came to light because somebody, a coworker, I guess you'd say, of Peterson at the school found out about it. And because they are required to report what they found out, that's when the whole thing happened there. So I guess, look, anytime you have a situation like this, when you have a 17-year-old student and a staffer, there is no consensual anything, right? You're just, our society has taken the position, and I think rightfully so, that when you are a child, you can't consent to anything. This does not appear, if it matters to you, I'm just telling you, you decide what to do with this. Doesn't seem to me as though from what we're hearing from the student's testimony, that this was she was hounding me, you know, kind of, you know, beat down the doors kind of a thing. It sounds like it was sort of him at the beginning, and then she kind of reciprocated, and obviously she never should have. She should have realized what she was doing was inappropriate. But for whatever reason, that did not happen. But in case we think this is some, you know, standing outside the kid's door and, you know, trying to coerce him into anything, it doesn't sound like it started out anything like that. It sounded like it was more of the student being interested, and she should have known better. I would think that I'm not going to tell you if this woman is attractive or not. I think everybody can sort of have their own judgments on these things. But if you are a female employee in a school and you are someone who boys, men, whatever, will find attractive, it would not be a shock to think that boys might say something to you. And I probably think it could happen the other way as well. Men and women, you just have to obviously, you know, run the other way. And that didn't happen in this case. And here we are now sitting in court having this going on right now. So Peterson does no longer work with the school. She's 33 years of age, charged with promoting a sexual performance of a minor, which is a felony, and a misdemeanor count of contributing to the deprivation or delinquency of a minor. This all happened basically in the year 2023 from April to October when the student was 17 years of age. So there you go. That's kind of summarizing the best I can on that. One of those stories that it's kind of hard to look the other way or not to just kind of be intrigued by what in the world happened here. So that's the latest that we can tell you about that particular story. All right, 429, if you are thinking about something in the spring, maybe you're thinking about popping the question, getting engaged. Maybe you're coming up on a big anniversary and it's time to replace the ring that you bought that lovely lady way back when with something new. Well, the gang at Wimmer's would love to visit with you. Yeah, they've taken care of so many people all winter long with the Christmas stockings, but now, hey, it's Valentine's Day, time for a lot of engagements, the spring is coming, summer weddings and all that stuff, and the gang at Wimmer's would love to take care of you. Wimmer'sDiamonds.com, but it's a lot more fun to stop by and see them in person. They're at 4582 32nd Avenue South in Fargo. Aaron and the team will take great care of you, so stop into Wimmer'sDiamonds.com, find out what they can do for you. 4:30, it's time now to check in at the newsroom. Austin Erickson has been working that beat for us here this afternoon, and he stops by the newsroom now. Hi, Austin.
Yeah, if I look preoccupied, it's because I got breaking news from Fargo Police. They want you to avoid the area of 25th Street and 9th Avenue South. The department is investigating a suspicious package. They say more information will become available released when it becomes available. So once again, Fargo Police investigating a suspicious package in the area of 25th Street and 9th Avenue South.
Okay, so whenever you say these things, I say, where is that and what's over there? 25th and 13th is...
that's, you know, a police station,
kind of where
it?
That's kind of by the police station, yep. So this would be just north of there. And I imagine this is kind of over by Big Top Bingo then, kind of over that direction. And it's not going to tell me from the map system that I'm on exactly where we're at here. But I think that's what we're talking about there.
And
by the Avalon, kind of there, the Big Top Bingo over
in that area.
Police
know that area well because that's where Muhammad, I believe his name was Muhammad Barakat, killed Officer Waleen.
We don't say his name on this show. We say Officer Waleen, but you didn't know that. I don't like to say the name of the suspect,
understandable,
the perpetrator, the killer, whatever. But yes, same area there. They found a suspicious package there, so they're saying stay away. Okay.
And that's the only information we have at this
point.
Also in the news, a man was arrested after Fargo police responded to a report of shots fired Wednesday night in the 1600 block of 34th Street South. 53-year-old Eric Jensen of West Fargo told police he fired shots in the air after getting into an argument with a man he knew stole his vehicle. He was arrested on suspicion of reckless endangerment. Police are looking for the other man who fled.
Okay.
Former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum takes part in his confirmation hearing for Interior Secretary. He heard questions from senators on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Burgum touted his accomplishments with North Dakota oil and gas production and his relationships with tribal nations. Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii asked Burgum if he would tell President Donald Trump he won't allow oil drilling in Bear Ears National Monument in Utah. In 2017, Trump signed a bill into law shrinking the area of the national monument, opening up for drilling. And when asked if he thinks climate change is a problem, Burgum said he believes it's a global phenomenon. And another big thing in politics, this time in Bismarck, the North Dakota House votes down the blue law 89-4. It would have prevented retailers from being open from midnight to noon on Sundays. The only state representatives voting in favor were those who introduced the bill, Republican Representatives Matthew Heilman of Bismarck, Jeff Hoverson of Minot, Joran Johnson of Fargo, and also Nico Rios of Williston. I found interesting, and I'd like to know the
thought. I thought Ben Koppelman was on that, too.
He said that he wanted to see the amendment that was made to the bill before he would have voted in support or defeated it. I want to know this person's thoughts on this bill. Republican State Representative Lisa Meyer of Bismarck, who also introduced the bill, voted against it.
Okay.
Republican State Representative Bernie Satram of Jamestown didn't vote on the bill.
All right. Good to hear. Thank you very much, Austin. Appreciate the update as always. One of the folks that you got to know through this program over the years, gentleman that joins me in studio right now, Matt Lyseth, former president of Hornbachers, and he is now taking a different career path, and he is a consultant, and he works with businesses of many different kinds, grocery stores and others, in systems and operations, process and things like that to make those businesses work as good as possible. And Matt and I got to be friends over the years because I loved having him on talking about what was happening in the grocery store and what's happening with our food and is steak still going to cost $30 a pound here this summer or what the story is. And so I've grown to have a very large respect for Matt in what he's done, rising through the ranks at Hornbacher's there. I thought he was a really great source of perspective on what was happening with the things that we eat and feed our families. And so he and I got together for a coffee not long ago just to catch up and see what he was up to these days. And I was really excited to hear he's taking his talents to help businesses around our region. And so I said, let's have you on the show. It'd be a fun chat. So Matt, thanks for coming by. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Steve. You're too kind. I really appreciate coming on today.
No, it's so true. Yours is one of, and I said earlier in the show, one of the best stories that we've seen in the business community here in a long time. Someone who started just bagging groceries at Hornbacher's and ended up running the company after a few years. So you've seen kind of all sides of business, and that's led you to have some of these great opportunities now that you're having and consulting with businesses on the things that they're doing. So let's catch everybody up to speed. What are you up to now?
Yeah, I hung up my own shingle. I started a consulting business, Lyseth and Associates, and I'm really just out there, you know, trying to enable business success, you know, through operational and organizational and strategic insight. It's really a culmination of what I've learned over 30 plus years in the retail industry. But I really believe most of the things that I've learned and practiced over the years really apply to every business, whether you're selling groceries or you're selling insurance. But it's all a people business. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really learned over the years is how do you treat the people in your mm-hmm. business correctly so they can take care of your customers correctly? And so that's really what I believe in.
I think what Hornbacher's became under your leadership is such a great template for some of these other conversations you're having now, because you can kind of look back and say, how did we do it at Hornbacher? So let's talk about the Hornbacher story. Obviously, there were people that got the friend or got the store and got the chain up and running, and then you kind of took it and led it from there. But what how did you guys do it? How did you grow Hornbacher's? What were some of the things that really worked well for you that you now can share that story with others?
I think one of the biggest lessons I learned, and that was from, you know, I had two mentors, Dean Hornbacher and Steve Everett, who were running the company as I was learning the business. And it was really about really developing the talent behind you. How do you give them all of the opportunities to learn everything that you know with 30 years of experience on year five, on day one? How do you really start connect people? Because when they made the business interesting to me, I got more excited and more invested. And once you realize as a leader, you cannot do it alone, you need really good people around you to make it work, that's when you really start investing in others around you to make your business better. And that's when it's really fun to see people that you've worked with take on new roles and responsibilities, and even sometimes they leave your organization, but they do even greater things because of what they learned with a few years or maybe a few decades working alongside you.
Developing people is, you know, books have been written, seminars have been given, entire careers have been forged on how to develop employees. What do you think that most organizations don't think about enough when it comes to developing the people that they have already?
That they're ready for development on day one. I think a lot of times we get caught in, well, I had to wait 5 years and cut my teeth before I was allowed to do anything real important. But I think more people want to be exposed to that sooner. They may not be able to make those decisions, but they can be part of it and really learn from your experience and other people in your organization's experience to be better sooner. And we all know in today's world, everything has to be faster. Turnover happens faster. People are not going to wait in an industry for 30 years like I did, to climb the ranks. We have to find a way to engage them now, get them excited, and that's what keeps people in organizations long term.
What did you find when you were kind of in that business? What were some of the things that you had to learn about developing people that maybe you wouldn't have known at the very beginning, but in doing your job day after day, you realize, okay, if I'm really going to develop a team of people here and give them those opportunities early on, I'm going to have to think this way as I work with them. What were some of those things for you?
One of the earliest learnings I had was, one, I don't want to hire anybody like me because they would drive me crazy. You can't have too many of the same person in there. But what I really learned was my way isn't the only way to do things. And sometimes the conversation about the vision, about where we're going, you know, we need to be here. Where do you think we need to go? What do we need to do to get there? And it became much easier because it's much more of an empowerment for your team to be able to do it their way. And as long as it's not taking 6 days for a 1 hour project, there's a lot of latitude to help people learn and grow and own the process. And that way you're not doing everything as a leader. You're helping to guide and support the team. And I think that's what really makes good businesses successful.
Every organization is different in when it comes to its operations. What we do here in our building is very different than making sure there's enough bananas on the shelves at Hornbacher's. But what are some of the basic principles of operations and making sure your company is working well that you think maybe it's easy to overlook when we've been doing it for a while? But what are some of those things, like if you're going to do this well, you've got to have these few things in place to make your business really work well?
Yeah, the first one is a common vision. You understand what your business is and what your business is not. Whether you're serving customers or having the best damn radio station in town, you the whole team needs to understand what we stand for and what we want to be. And then from there, it's got to be a list of standards. And you talk about what are the expectations that we're going to deliver to our customers every single day. And whether that's the grocery store and how the bananas are stacked and which way the apples face, or how we're going to conduct ourselves on air and everything else that we do, we have to be on the same page. And those kind of basic steps help you bring the new people in so they know what's expected. They know how it should be done. And then they can work through that and learn and get better at everything they do. It really can be very simple. But it's got to be very specific about about what matters to your business.
Yeah, good points there. We're busy with Matt Lyseth, and Matt is a consultant. Lyseth and Associates helps businesses grow and become more efficient, make sure that they're on point with all the things that they're doing. Matt, you and I talked when we had coffee about the grocery store world. And on one end, you've got those of you that know this brand, Byerly's brand, Lunds and Byerly's is kind of known in the Twin Cities as a high-end, you know, carpet on the aisle, carpet on the floors, and great selection, but you might pay a little more. Then you've got a Cub Foods, which is kind of more just like, hey, there's no frills here, but we're going to save you 3 cents on a box of cereal, that kind of a thing. It seems to me like that's sort of a microcosm of business as a whole, because we are trying here to do radio and content like a Lunds and Byerly's. We're trying to give you a great experience, try to get to know you. We do things you don't have to do. We just gave away a trip to go see the Eagles in Las Vegas at the Sphere, stuff the radio stations used to do. And then there are a lot of stations that are kind of going the Cub Foods route, where we're going to bring in all syndicated national programming so we don't have to have any real people here because they're expensive and we got to teach them, we got to train them and whatever. So it's like I think every business has to sort of decide what do you want to be, because you can't have half the team with a mindset of we want to be Byerly's and half the team with a mindset of I think we're really Cub Foods, right?
Absolutely. You have to have that vision and know where you are. Speaking of grocery stores, you know, you never want to get caught in that, what I always thought is the mucky middle. You're never going to be known as the price player. You know, we all know who they are out there. They're big, and most people are shopping with them. And when you get stuck in the middle where you don't really stand for anything, your brand reputation is going to suffer, and longevity really is going to suffer. You know, that's where the new brands come in and really take over market share and reduce the viability of these brands that don't understand what they're doing. It's the same thing, I believe, in radio. You know, all of these canned radio programs where nothing is local and nothing is about that, they last, and then they go away, and then they rebrand and start over again. I always got to live in a world where it was a long-term brand, and we got to reinvest in the people and reinvest in our market, and that was what it was exciting. And I believe you have to be known for something, and then you have to do that every day.
Yeah. Can I keep you for a couple more minutes? I've got to get to a break here, but I'd love to talk to you about the future of how we get our food and what you think that might be in store for us coming up soon.
Absolutely.
All right, Matt Lyseth, and he'll continue to be with us here. We'll come back on the other side. How are we going to get our groceries 10 years from now? Will there still be stores? Will it just be like some autonomous UFO that drops them out of the sky? What's next in the grocery world? We'll talk about that coming up next. We're continuing our conversation with Matt Lyseth, former president of Hornbacher's, now in the consulting world, partner and founder of Lyseth and Associates. Matt, getting our groceries, it's always for me been an experience. Do you feel good about going and filling up that basket? You're taking care of stuff, taking care of your family and bright produce and healthy meats and all of that. But the grocery store industry is changing. I see fewer places doing what Hornbacher's did so well, providing that great experience, and it's kind of more transactional with commodities. What does the future hold for grocery stores?
Yeah, I think it's going to continue to be even more diverse than it is today. I see more specialty operators out there, where there'll always be, you know, the big guy out there that, you know, is running the grocery business across America. But not everybody is going to be appealed to that. So they're going to see more, I think, smaller markets, more focus on fresh produce and really premium meats. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, I shop in four different places where in our days when we were much younger, Steve, it was one store.
Yeah, right.
And we did it, you know, a couple times a week. But I think there's so many other areas to get different products. And I think part of it is the American diet and really their taste buds have changed, that there are so many items that people are looking for today that one building just cannot hold anymore. Mm.
Aldi seems to be figuring something out, right? A limited number of goods, buy right, keep the price low, and people seem to love that place.
Yeah, absolutely. And they started it out, and that's a great example of they're true to who they are. In my world, you know, the old days, you would never have a limited item thing. You would bring something in and then not have it, because in my old world, the customers would let me know, why the heck is that not on the shelf today? It's like, oh, no, we only bring stuff in when we have it. And so that's their balance, and they stay true to it. They bring stuff in, and it's gone. And that kind of treasure hunt has been really good for them. But there's a lot more stores that are starting to do that. And, you know, one that I think the community really wants, you know, Trader Joe's, which is closest in the Twin Cities, has that same kind of cool vibe and a little bit of, you know, treasure hunt appeal. Those are the stores that are really winning. And another brand that is not around here, but for those of us that love the American Southwest, you know, Sprouts Farmers Market. Just a great organization, fresh produce and really great meat. And so there's a lot of little ones that are really chipping away at the big conventional ones that used to be the leaders.
Yeah, the niche players. We've got about another minute left here. Tell us what kind of businesses you are helping with your consulting work right now and who might be a good candidate to give you a call.
Sure. You know, obviously, I'm helping out a few retailers out there because that fortunate enough to have met a lot of people along the way in the grocery industry. And when someone asked what I was doing and they needed some help, we jumped right into it and started helping build that business. But I'm really, it's probably smaller businesses where we have entrepreneurs and it's a smaller staff, really trying to figure out how are they going to set up their business for future success. You know, how do I structure my leadership? How do I figure out how much of the business I want to run and how much do I need to turn over to other people? A lot of great entrepreneurs are just really, really hard workers, and they're going to kill themselves because they're working so hard, and really finding that balance of how do I still live a really good life and be part of my business. The other part, I've had a few conversations, nonprofits. I was lucky enough throughout my whole career, and I continue to do it, to serve on nonprofit boards, and they do a lot of great work.
They do.
But they don't always run a great business model.
Very true.
And so those are the kind of groups that, you know, I would just have a passion to help.
Have you got a website or a Facebook page?
I'm on LinkedIn at Lyseth and Associates.
Lyseth and Associates on LinkedIn, best way to catch them. Matt, all the best. Great to catch up with you again. Continued success, and look forward to visit with you again soon down the road.
Thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Matt Lyseth, and Lyseth and Associates. Check them out on the LinkedIn page there. All right, top five and five coming up next, still in the 5 o'clock hour, Dr. Tom Ambrosio talking about what's going on with Israel and Hamas and what are we really getting out of this hostage exchange. All that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. It's going to be cold. I could just probably leave it there, and the statement would be accurate just about anywhere in our nation. We're going to have cold temperatures coming here for the weekend and into early next week. And WTOP Radio in Washington, D.C. says inauguration temperatures on Monday will be the lowest since Reagan's second inauguration in 1985. The weather forecast calls for a chance of snow Sunday, followed by gusty winds and high temps only around 20 degrees on Monday. And by late morning, temps on Monday will be somewhere around 20 for actual air temperature. 15 to 20 mile an hour winds with gusts up to 30. We could have dangerously low wind chill values. Now, we're North Dakotans, and we'll be okay with this, but I don't know. The crowd might be a little sparse there. The temperature in Reagan's second inauguration, some of you may remember this, but that temperature that day at noon was 7 degrees. The ceremony is expected to begin at 12:30 Eastern time, 11:30 our time. But the temperature on that day back in 1985 was 7. Wind chills were between 10 and 20 below. They had to move the swearing-in ceremony indoors, and the parade was canceled on that day. Former President John F. Kennedy's 1961 inauguration was also extremely cold, 22 degrees with several inches of snow on the ground. That's kind of what it sounds like we might be getting here on Monday. It was 42 for Joe Biden's inauguration 4 years ago. When Donald Trump was inaugurated the first time, it was 48. We were there for that one, too, and that didn't feel so bad. Former President Barack Obama's 2013 inauguration was 45 degrees. For his second one, it was 28. And here we are, going to be maybe teens. If we're lucky, maybe in the 20s. I don't know. No global warming seems to be hitting out in Washington, D.C. So that is the story there. We will be there live for the events of the day. Thank you to our presenting sponsors, ND Estate Services, Kramer for Senate, and the North Dakota Republican Party. Supporting sponsors as well include NODAC agent Matt Moxness, High Point Networks, the Lakes Area Patriots, the Trump Store in Lake Park, Encore Family Consignments in Fertile, Minnesota, Dakota Tire Brakes and more, Moxie Java at the Lights. We thank them all for making the trip possible. All right, let's get to the 5 o'clock, top five at five. And these are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. They're not everybody's top five, but they're my top five because I believe they pass the so what test. Story number one, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, has chosen the person who will replace Marco Rubio, who is going to be confirmed as President-elect Trump's Secretary of State. And today he made the announcement it will be Ashley Moody, the Republican state attorney general in Florida. DeSantis made the announcement in Orlando today, and he said, I wanted somebody with a demonstrated record of delivering results. Moody was elected to statewide office in 2018, reelected back in 2022, and she has in recent weeks become a popular choice within the political establishment in Florida there. She's 49 years old, a fifth-generation Floridian, and I watched a little bit of that announcement today, and she is high energy. She is a ton of fun. She has been a federal prosecutor, worked as a circuit court judge before winning the election as attorney general. Her husband is a law enforcement officer as well, so another reason to like Ashley Moody. There was a lot of talk about it might be Laura Trump, but... And there was some talk about Byron Donalds. He could be great, but he said, I do not want to take anybody else out of the House. We've got too thin of a majority there. I was impressed watching this today by how deferential and complimentary Ron DeSantis was to Donald Trump. They were rivals. They went at it pretty hard in the primary. But he was very classy today. And he said, one of my biggest priorities here was to find somebody who will support Donald Trump's agenda. We don't need a whole lot of people trying to make a name for themselves in D.C. We want people that are going to go there and follow Donald Trump's lead. And he's exactly right. We need that right now in the country. And I think she will do that well. I am, as you know, a huge Ron DeSantis fan. I hope someday he gets his shot to be president. I don't know. His sort of public vibe turns some people off. But man, it is home run after home run after home run in the state of Florida. He was talking about Ashley Moody and the way that she had served that state and just not putting up with any of the woke stuff, the DEI stuff, the trans stuff. Like, they're so adversarial to that in Florida. They openly mock all the woke stuff, and it's absolutely fantastic. So that's story number one. Story number two. Doug Burgum had his hearing today in front of a Senate committee. He is Donald Trump's choice for Interior Secretary. And the Bismarck Tribune reports today that in order to be confirmed, Doug Burgum had to meet with federal regulators and divest himself of certain things, which makes sense, right? If you're going to run Interior, you know, you can't have a lot of stocks that could directly benefit from your leadership. So they had to make some agreements there. And so Doug Burgum will maintain his financial interests
in some of the companies that he has ownership in that are like family farm kind of things, but he will have to get rid of some other things. He will continue to hold financial interest in farmland that he rents out in North Dakota and Minnesota, but will not provide services for production on the farmland. He will divest his oil mineral interests in Williams and McKenzie counties. He will also sell all of his interest in 19 different companies like Microsoft, Apple, Netflix, Meta, Verizon, and a number of energy companies as well. He will not have to give up financial interest from his family's agricultural company, ArthurCompanies.com. And as the former governor of North Dakota, he will have to recuse himself from matters pertaining specifically to our state until December of 2025, a year after he resigned the governorship. So thought that was interesting. And good job and good reporting by the Bismarck Tribune on that one today. WDAY Radio reports that the North Dakota House has voted down in overwhelming fashion the blue law bill that was brought by four House Republicans. They want the state to bring back the blue laws, which basically means that on Sunday mornings until noon, only quote-unquote essential businesses can be open. But the bill went down 89-4 today. So it never had a chance. The only four people that wanted it were the four people in committee that got the whole thing going. But even there, it got a do-not-pass recommendation. So 89-4. That one gets defeated. So business will be able to stay open on Sunday mornings in North Dakota. I told you this yesterday. I'm a little conflicted. I do like Sunday mornings being all about heading to church, but I do think businesses should have the right to be open if they want to be able to make things happen. And I know some people are saying, well, Chick-fil-A has done good, Hobby Lobby's done well, and they're closed on Sunday. Well, that's by their choice. And they're a little different than mom and pop's cafe or the local lumber yard or whatever it else it might be. Yes, they can handle it because they're Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A. CNBC reports that sales of all electric vehicles and hybrid models reached 20% of new car, truck, and sales in the U.S. for the first time last year. 3.2 million electric vehicles, 1.9 million hybrids, including plug-in models, were involved there. So the 3.2 includes about 2 million hybrids and 1.3 million all-electric models. So that's a higher number than I would have thought, that one out of every five new cars sold was an electric vehicle last year in the country. And finally, American Investment Banks disclosed a record-smashing quarter helped by surging trading activity around the U.S. election and a pickup in investment banking deal flow. Now, this story gets deep in the weeds in a hurry, but let me make it easy here for you. You don't need to know all that. You just need to know this. You need to know that Donald Trump is going to be the president here in a few days. And because of it, business people are optimistic. And a lot of people that have big microphones are going to tell you that it's because Joe Biden set the table for this and that or whatever, and they're going to try to downplay Trump's influence at any time. But I heard Brian Cronk say this morning on Scott Hannon's show, that American business owners and executives and entrepreneurs are energized like they have not been in years because they know that the federal government does not hate business anymore. And this is just another reflection of that, that it was a great quarter. Now, granted, they didn't know until early November, but they know ahead of time, some of these big bank people, and they got a lot of business done the last couple months of the year, and there's a ton of momentum and energy going into 2025. It was a great quarter, and seems like the boom times are just beginning. 517 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back on the program, the fossil fuels holy war continues. Thanks to the senators on Capitol Hill and the journalists at Serve Us News in North Dakota. We'll talk about that next. One of the great parts of living in this area that we live in, Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo, is how people come together to get the job done. And the FM West Fargo Chamber is a great example of that. They are getting the job done for businesses in our community, trying to find new ways to make new employees feel at home here when they've come from other places. And we're thankful to have on the line Donna Heck today. And she is the concierge strategist at the FM West Fargo Chamber. Hey, Donna, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Last time we visited with you, we talked a little bit about the Community Concierge Program, but we could use a refresher. Tell us again what you're up to over there.
Sure. At the Chamber, what we want to do is really attract and retain the best talent that we can when businesses are looking to bring that talent in. So the Concierge Program it's a platform that fosters those connections and support for newcomers in our community to really help them find that sense of belonging in building long-term relationships, friendships, as well as professional networking opportunities. So it's really about finding that sense of belonging for newcomers.
And I imagine there's different levels of service to this, so you've got different options for different businesses?
There are, and you know, the businesses can partake in any of the levels. And there, we offer that white glove service, and it might be that higher level position, senior level candidate, or somebody new that they've hired in as an executive director in that C-suite level, where we can include really curated experiences for them. If it's a couple, or their families, and to really help them find their landing space and help them start building those connections in our community, where we'll offer, you know, potentially up to a year we can follow that person and help them get those resources that they need and get connected. And then there's that more customized level. And I would say this has probably been the most utilized up to this point, is that customized level is when our businesses have candidates coming in, they can pick and choose the option that they want, whether it be a curated tour, a lunch, or we even offer, if they're moving with a trailing spouse or a partner, we can even offer that resume circulation. You know, 1,700 members strong, we have great connections and throughout the community that we can help foster that relationship as well for their accompanying families or partners. And then we also offer, this is an all access, there's no charge to it. For businesses that are bringing in and hiring new candidates, turn them on to our icebreakers. Our icebreakers are our community champions. Steve, they just love to promote our community and the amenities in our community with newcomers and get them connected. And, you know, our newcomers can just check out liveinfmarea.com and find an icebreaker, a community champion that really resonates with them, whether it be activities or family stages or lifestyles. And it's just a great way to offer that opportunity as well.
Yeah, it's great. You got all kinds of different options here. Find the level that meets your needs, something that will work out for you. How do people find out more, or get in touch, or sign up, Donna?
All they have to do is go on to the Chamber website, fmwfchamber.com, and just search concierge, and it'll pop my information up. Give me a call. I would love to visit with anybody about this.
That sounds great.
It's such
great.
A highly flexible program that it's not carved in stone.
Got it.
Yeah, we're offering flexibility.
Love it. Donna, thanks so much for joining us today and giving us more details on this. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Take care, Donna. Have a great rest of the day. 526 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. I want to talk a little bit next here on the program about some of the confirmation hearings going on Capitol Hill. Scott Bissent comes from the hedge trading world. So he's in the business of putting deals together, making business happen, transactions. We talked a little bit about how banks had a good fourth quarter. He is the person that Donald Trump has tapped to be his Treasury Secretary. And the Treasury Secretary has an important job. They really provide a lot of guidance to Fed monetary policy and a lot of guidance to the president as well. A very important job. He's a thought leader that makes the markets move, you could say. I could say it that way. Janet Yellen, the last one, and she was someone that when she spoke, people had to decide what to make of what she said. And
I personally feel like she was wrong a lot, but she definitely moved markets with what she was saying, probably more earlier rather than later. Well, he was being confirmed today, or having his confirmation hearings today on Capitol Hill. And I want to play you a report that was filed earlier today on the Larry Kudlow program by one of the chief White House reporters that they have working on the Fox News channel on Fox Business. And she is Hillary Vaughn is her name. And she gives us this recap of the day. And you're going to be hearing some questions coming from Elizabeth Warren, who you know, Bernie Sanders, who you know, and the other person who is not going to be introduced, but you'll hear his voice, is a senator from Oregon, a Democrat that all you need to know is he's just out in left field here. So this is a little bit of a recap today on Scott Bessent's day at the Senate. And I think this is some very, very interesting commentary that you're going to hear, and will give you a sense of kind of the many battles that are being fought on Capitol Hill with this, maybe not so much these confirmation hearings, because these people should get through, but it just shows you the kind of mindsets that you're dealing with in Washington, D.C.
Scott Bessent, Trump's pick for Treasury Secretary, defended Trump's tax cuts at his hearing today, saying that ultimately, if the Trump tax cuts were allowed to expire, the result would be a massive middle class tax hike. He also said this is a pass or fail mission, and if the tax cuts were to expire, that failure could mean economic calamity. He also warned Congress that their spending is out of control, and that is part of the reason he decided to leave his private life for politics. Bessent also said that the government does not have a money problem. They have a spending problem.
Yes. Is there any billionaire rich enough who you wouldn't support a tax cut for going forward?
That I think it's unwise to single out any
rich people?
Any individual.
You got three people on top, Mr. Musk, Mr. Bezos, and Mr. Zuckerberg, who are now worth almost $1 trillion.
The three billionaires who you listed that all made the money themselves.
Bessent also tried to calm any concerns that Americans would end up picking up the tab for Trump's tariff plans. Bessent making the point that Biden kept all of Trump's tariffs in place, but what Biden didn't do was enforce the purchase agreements on China that required China to buy more American goods. China didn't follow through, and Biden's administration didn't do anything about it. Bessent says that that deal, if enforced, would be a big boost for farmers who would see China purchasing billions of dollars more of their products. He also pushed back on the idea that Biden's billions in subsidies for clean energy would help the U.S. compete with China, as some Democrats urged him today not to roll those tax credits back.
It's going to be damn good for China, because we are in an arms race on clean energy with them. Are you going to be on the side of people who want to unravel this?
China will build 100 new coal plants this year. There is not a clean energy race. There is an energy race.
Yes.
Was some common ground found today. Senator Bernie Sanders says he does back Trump's idea to cap credit card interest rates. And Senator Elizabeth Warren says she likes his idea of repealing the debt limit. On that idea, Warren told Bessent that her and Trump are, quote, singing from the same hymnal.
Okay, well, some agreement there. I thought that was a great response. China's going to build 100 coal plants this year. So you want to talk about how China is a leader in green anything? Come on. These are not serious conversations between serious people, and it really gets tiresome. And I thought Bessent handled that perfectly today. We're not in a clean energy race. We're in an energy race. Completely agree with him. All right, 5:31 here on the Steve Holstrom Show. All right, we've got a check of news and weather. And then when we come back after that, Dr. Thomas Ambrosio, a political science professor at North Dakota State University, will join us. So what will Israel and the U.S. really get from Hamas and the proposed hostage swap? And is it enough? We'll talk about that. And when could this all be settled? That's next on the Steve Holstrom Show. Amazing service. Always answers with a friendly response and shows up with a smile. Simply amazing and highly recommended. Helped me out in a real pinch twice. Awesome and quick service. Very good communication. Thank you, John. Those are just some of the reviews of Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal. As you know, John Minton is a 30-year combat vet, and they are the pros in junk haul and removal, whether it's residential or commercial cleanout, removal and small demolition, hoarding clear out as well. John Minton, Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal, is the guy to get the job done. When they do a job, they put their family's name on it, so you know they're going to get that job done well. Don't call on one of those out-of-town companies that doesn't know how things are done here. Call a guy who's in our community, family-owned, veteran-owned, sincere local businessman, John Minton at Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal. Best way to find out about how to get a hold of them is go to roeandjoejunk.com, R-O-E-N-J-O, junk.com. Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal. When it's got to go, call Roe and Joe. We are pleased to be joined right now on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, Dr. Thomas Ambrosio from North Dakota State University. He's a political science professor there at NDSU. Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking a minute. I gave you a call or reached out to you because I saw that we were getting close to a deal. We thought it was a done deal between Israel and Hamas to do a hostage swap and a ceasefire. Now today we're hearing it might not be so much of a done deal. So tell us what we need to know about what's happening over there right now.
Sure. It appeared that there has been a tremendous amount of movement towards a ceasefire and hostage deal between Hamas and Israel, which had been in the works or at least been kind of pushed, especially by the Biden administration, for months and months and months, as kind of both sides have exhausted themselves in this war. And at a certain point, Israel is kind of just pushing rubble from one side of the street to the other. So the idea of kind of this ultimate victory is probably not going to happen. And instead, some type of a ceasefire is in the works. So, of course, in order for Israel to have a ceasefire, the Hamas, the terrorist organization in the Gaza Strip, would have to release hostages. So it seemed like things were kind of in a stalemate for a while, and then President Trump kind of gets elected. And even though he's not in office yet, obviously he takes, you know, becomes president again on Monday, it seems like he's already been deeply involved in one way or another, at least indirectly, in this process. And we see here actually a lot of reports that his election kind of changed the calculus, especially for Hamas, and therefore kind of pushed both sides then to come to this agreement. Now, it is President Biden announced that he has an agreement, but the Israelis are saying are delaying voting for it, saying that Hamas has done something to create some kind of a crisis. And probably what's happening is that they agreed to the broad strokes of the plan, but there's still the kind of the nitty gritty details of specifically which hostages, when, and that kind of that timetable of release.
Yeah. So there's a thank you for that great summary there. So I have a few questions as we get into the pieces of that, Tom. So when you say that I'm a little too close to the political side of it, so I probably can't see it from the 10,000 foot perspective like you. But it sure feels to me like Donald Trump came out and said there's going to be hell to pay if there are not hostages that if there is any hostages still being held, American hostages, when I take office. And all of a sudden we hear something getting done. I heard you say that Donald Trump's entry into the picture here as the next president, the president-elect, probably had something to do with it. How big of a factor do you think Donald Trump was in this?
Probably relatively significant. You know, the Biden administration, I mean, unless you have like a kind of a rooting interest in kind of the Biden administration, if you have that, then you're going to say, well, Trump had nothing to do with it. But clearly something changed. And the change thing was, of course, President Trump being elected and actually sending envoys somehow indirectly to talk to people. So I think that it does change things. I mean, Hamas realizes that whatever kind of status quo they had with Israel and the United States, it was going to fundamentally change with Trump in office. So they probably didn't want to see what that hell to pay would be. And it actually reminds me very much of, if people can recall, 1981 on Inauguration Day when the hostages in Iran were released. It was clear that the Iranian government did not want to do this under, you know, kind of the Carter administration, but also was kind of nervous about what Reagan would do as president. So they kind of tried to clear the deck before the new administration came in.
Very interesting. I have to wonder, I think I heard the number of 100 as potentially the number of hostages that Hamas might still have. Tom, it's been a year and a half, and I can't imagine the hell that those people have gone through. Do you think any of those hostages are still alive?
Some of them are alive. They've probably been horrifically mistreated, especially the women that we already heard reports of from those who have been released. Yeah, they're going to be, you know, they'll be glad to be home if they are alive, but there'll be a lot that are not going to, you know, at least so we can be reunited with their families in one form or another. But Hamas also supposedly has been somewhat cagey about which hostages are still alive and which are not. Of course, in their interest, they have an interest in being somewhat cagey about it, because the more... If Israel thinks that people are alive, then they're more willing, that Israel will be more willing to give concessions. And actually, it seems like there's kind of a formula they worked out. We don't have all the details yet, but it's kind of formula for like a certain number of Palestinian prisoners released for live hostages, live males, live females, and then kind of those who have already been killed.
So what will a ceasefire accomplish? What will happen during this ceasefire if it ever comes to fruition? And how long do we expect that might last?
Well, that's really the issue. This ceasefire is supposed to last something like around 3 months, becoming permanent. Kind of there's a series of steps that will have to be made in terms of these. Now, at the end, then it'll be this plan to rebuild Gaza. Now, I don't know what that looks like. The territory's been devastated. The issue of rebuilding is less problematic, because that's just kind of money and time and labor. But the real issue is who's going to govern Gaza. According to this deal, Israel will all either completely withdraw or all but withdraw. If that's including the key border crossings, which of course will allow Hamas to rebuild potentially. So this is probably, I mean, in this region, nothing ever really ends, especially when we're coming to the Palestinians and Israelis. It just pauses for a while and sets for, well, next time, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to go back to a conversation you and I had probably around Thanksgiving time. And at that time, you and I were visiting, and you had said, you know, I think based on what we're seeing, you know, they've kind of made their way through much of the strip, and they're kind of up into that sort of final frontier. And it feels like the end is drawing near of this, and Israel should be able to finish the job fairly soon. How is that progressing? And is the story now different than maybe what you think it might have been, say, in October or November?
I mean, Hamas is still so well entrenched. At a certain point, you can only there's only so many tunnels you can clear without putting your own troops at a tremendous risk. So there's still Hamas going to be there. And they've also, they're hiding behind civilians. So Israel's tried to move civilians from place to place to try to take out Hamas, but Hamas kind of goes with them. At a certain point, the idea of kind of eliminating Hamas from the outside is going to be impossible. Instead, I think you degrade them to a point in which they cannot launch substantive attacks, which I think is probably the best Israel is going to have to accept at this point, and possibly in the future. Hamas will be so delegitimized that Palestinian society will take care of the problem for them.
Interesting. When I heard the details of the hostage swap, I saw one number, and then I heard a couple of other numbers. So I don't know that I have my facts right, Dr. Ambrosio, but I believe I heard 33 Israeli or American or both, some combination, hostages would be returned to the free side. And there would be something like 1,000 Hamas fighters returned from Israel to Gaza. First of all, are my numbers anywhere near accurate? And second of all, if that is the case, why is a trade of 33 for 1,000 considered a fair swap?
Probably when all said and done, probably close to 1,000, if not a little bit around that number. It's not a fair swap, obviously. We're talking about the Israelis are civilian hostages, or they're essentially POWs, those who are military and captured by Hamas. The Hamas people in Israel jails are terrorists. And I don't know if I told you, I was in Israel many years ago and actually was able to go to one of the prisons and met with some of the terrorists.
Oh, wow.
And these are people with blood on their hands, not the October 7th attack. That's something that's been explicitly excluded. But I mean, for Israel, they want their people back, and they're not will. If they tried this one-to-one swap, the Palestinians will never accept it. The Israelis are willing to pay a very high price to get their people back, which in many ways tells you how much they value their people. And yes, it's unfair in kind of a macro, you know, number sense, but this is sometimes the price you have to pay to get people home.
Yeah, it is what it is. So if I go back to Donald Trump's kind of the chest pounding that he did on this earlier and saying, hey, you know, if there's American hostages going to be held to pay when this happens, well, here we are now just a few days away, and it sounds like Israel is getting back some of their people, but maybe the U.S. isn't really getting back any of theirs. So if that's the case, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if that is the case, then have we really accomplished much through what Donald Trump is trying to do as a threat to Hamas?
Well, I don't think we have the full the detailed list, but my understanding is that the Americans actually would be released in the first wave.
Okay.
And I think that itself is telling. If my understanding is correct, again, we don't have the full details yet, but my understanding is that the Americans will be released initially because Hamas does not want to have Americans in their hands when Trump becomes
president. I see. Okay. Well, that makes all the difference then. So thank you for that.
It would be interesting thought experiment. If there were no Americans, would that change? Would we be coming to a ceasefire now?
Mm-hmm.
Because you wouldn't have that threat hanging over Hamas.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Well, it's a fascinating story. We don't talk enough about this, about the fact that there are still hostages there. And at some point, I'm sure it's very difficult for the people who are controlling these governments and these militaries. You want to get your people out, but it's hard to get them. And yeah, you can go in and bomb everybody, but then your people that are hostages are being held, they're dead too. So these are difficult, difficult things. But thank you, Dr. Ambrosio, for helping us break it down a little bit. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me. Anytime.
Okay, thanks again. Dr. Thomas Ambrosio from North Dakota State University. A great source of perspective on this story, and has been all along. 5:49 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Before we finish up, Kelly Armstrong making good on his campaign promises on mental health. That and more coming up next. Well, you might love your neighborhood, but you might have outgrown your home. If that's you, contact Tom and the team at Delta Design and Construction. Tom and his team of experts have been designing and remodeling homes for more than 40 years. Want an extra bedroom? Need that three-season porch? One more stall in the garage for that new car? Just a little change can make a big difference in the function of your space. Discover your options online at deltadesign.biz or call Tom. 701-235-1212, 235-1212, 235-1212. Tom and the team at Delta Design and Construction. All right. I don't know why we keep doing this, but the reporters at the Associated Press in Bismarck wrote a story today talking about Doug Burgum being on Capitol Hill for his confirmation hearings. And they talk about Mazie Hirono with her comments today at Burgum, saying, this is very troubling that you're going to be allowing actions that result in burning more fossil fuels, just the stuff you'd expect to see. And then I saw this paragraph. This is not what somebody said in Washington Day. These are the reporters from the Associated Press in Bismarck. They go from one quote into kind of a transition to their next point, and they say this. Fossil fuels, oil, natural gas, and coal, cause climate change. When they burn, greenhouse gases are released. When asked if he thinks climate change is a problem, Burgum said he believes it's, quote, a global phenomenon. Okay, a couple things here. First of all, I suppose Burgum is just going to say whatever he needs to get through the event. I wish he would have fought back on that a little bit more. But seriously, Associated Press people, you're just going to come out in your factual reporting in this story and say fossil fuels, oil, natural gas, and coal cause climate change. When they burn, greenhouse gases are released. I don't even know what a greenhouse gas is. I think that's another sort of term that we make up to sort of categorize certain things. But, you know, just call them what they are. Whatever, you know, carbon dioxide, methane, whatever. We call them greenhouse gases because what we want to make it seem like, what's the last greenhouse you were in, right? It was warm, probably humid. So they want to scare you there. And for them to come out and say it's fossil fuels, oil, natural gas, cause climate change. It's like this is a theory and nothing more, but we see this over and over in our reporting. I don't know that I can change the world on this, but I'm going to call it out, this foolishness, when I see it, because this is a theory, an unprovable theory, and you cannot prove that the temperature today is any different than it would have been had a human being never set foot on this part of the globe, you know, hundreds of years ago. So this stuff just drives me nuts. It just absolutely does. All right. A new poll is out from Fox News Channel, and they say that Donald Trump is the most popular that he's ever been. How about that? They did a poll. They do this poll on a fairly regular basis, but they find that his favorability rating now is 52%. And that's the highest that he's been before. Joe Biden is well under that. He's having some trouble there. And then they ask about a bunch of different issues. Majority of people favor ending daylight savings time, by the way, 62%. Only 54% are in favor of extending the 2017 tax reform law. Are you kidding me? Like 95% of people came out better on that deal. What's wrong? What's with you, the other 46% on this one here? My goodness. Joe Biden leaves. It just gets worse and worse for him. Back in 2017, when Donald Trump left office, just 37% approved of Trump. And here he is at 52%. I think that's pretty interesting there. So a tough deal for Joe Biden on his way out the door. It gets better and better for Trump and worse for Joe Biden. I saw like 5 minutes of that press conference he did last night, probably 5 seconds, and turned it off. Just, you told us that he was the guy? Come on. Have a great night, friend. Keep on flying that flag.